Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Job interviews are nerve-wracking enough. What questions will they ask? Will you have the right answers? What will that person sitting across the table from you really think about you? Well, what if your interviewer wasn't human, but instead a camera and a computer? Major corporations are using artificial intelligence systems to interview job candidates these days. The AI watches your facial expressions, listens to your voice, scores what and how you say things. It can spit out a ranking to help the company decide whether you get the job. Now, developers say the AI interviewers eliminate the chief problem with job interviews, mainly that humans have myriad biases. But critics say these systems are based on pseudoscience, that they actually radically scale up a whole new set of biases. So this hour on Point, the AI will interview you now. And you can join us. Have you been interviewed by a computer? So we definitely want to hear from you if you've experienced this. What was it like? Did it work for you? Now, if you work at a company that uses such systems, what are the advantages or disadvantages? Join us online at Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, we'll begin today with Drew Harwell. He's a technology reporter for The Washington Post, and his story on AI job interviews ran under the headline, "A face scanning algorithm increasingly decides whether you deserve the job." And we have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Drew, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so first of all, how does it work? Do you sit in front of like a laptop or a computer? How does the actual computerized interview function?
Yeah, so you send in your resume, normal as ever, and they send you back a link. You open it on your cell phone or your computer. You look into your webcam and you start talking. They give you like five or so questions. You have maybe 15 to 30 minutes to answer. And you're effectively just looking into a blank screen, answering how you think the system wants you to answer. And all the meanwhile, it's sort of scanning what they call your facial action units. Are you smiling or frowning? How do your eyes look? It's also measuring, you know, the tone of your voice and the words you're choosing. All of this gets boiled down into your employability score.
Okay. And then employability score? So the computer generates a number that says, I don't know, it's on a scale of 0 to 100. Here's how employable you are for this company?
Pretty much, yeah. It actually generates a set of different numbers based off of attributes that it thinks you have. Like one of them is personal stability. So it effectively grades you on how stable, like personally stable it thinks you are, as well as communication, sort of how you would deal with, you know, problematic customers or coworkers.
Drew, you still with us?
All of these things come out.
Drew, you still there? Oh. I have a feeling that the AI is actually trying to get to us now here. Okay, so you know what? We're going to see if we can reconnect with Drew Harwell in Washington, because he actually, in the course of reporting for The Washington Post, he spoke with people at HireVue, one of the major technology recruiting firms creating this software. We did reach out to HireVue. They declined to join us. But I'd like to actually bring into the conversation Ifeoma Ajunwa. She joins me in the On Point studio, and she's a professor at Cornell University's Industrial and Labor Relations School and a faculty member at Cornell Law School as well. Professor Ajunwa, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so first of all, I just want to play a little bit of tape here from one of these companies that's selling this software. This is VCV. It's a competitor to HireVue, and they're an artificial intelligence hiring assistant, which relies, as Drew was beginning to tell us, audio and video interviews to help employers vet prospective employees. And here's a clip from their promotional video.
You can understand candidates' emotions during video interviews with face recognition technology. Estimate and comment the candidate, as well as share the video with a hiring manager before arranging a meeting. Additionally, you have the option to add any test or questionnaire for the candidate, as well as track the automatically created analytics and predict the candidate's performance.
So that's promotional video from VCV, a company that's doing this work. Professor Ajunwa, we've long known that face-to-face interviews are the probably the one of the most problematic parts of the hiring process, because people, they have confirmation biases, they bring all sorts of unconscious bias to the table when doing these interviews. So is not using an AI system an opportunity to eliminate all that from the process?
So it's undeniable that people have biases. This has been confirmed over and over again by several social scientific studies. And especially in hiring, those biases can actually affect people's in employment prospects. However, I think it's also quite misguided to think that using an automated system means that human bias has been fully removed. We still have to remember that humans are creating these algorithms, these automated systems. And unless we actually know that the systems have been created very consciously with the idea of removing human bias, then we can't really just blindly rely on the fact that it's automated as a sign that it's objective or free of bias.
I see. So humans are still providing the sets of rules by which the algorithm is working.
Exactly. Here. So humans are providing the rules, they're creating the algorithms, and they're also creating the parameters for the algorithm to understand human emotion. I mean, just think about how varied human emotion is, and also how varied the way we express our emotions culturally, right, ethnically. That is all very hard for computers really to quantify. So to think that you can boil it down to one algorithm is really quite misguided.
But wouldn't the argument that some of these companies make, these are the technology developers, an argument that they would make is that it's easier to train AI out of its biases than it is to train human recruiters. So if the system is showing some problems, then they can go in and tweak it. Or through machine learning, perhaps it can constantly learn to train itself out of biases. Is that not an advantage?
So that is a possibility. The problem is we don't know if this actually happens in practice. Currently, these systems, these automated hiring systems, whether it's video interviewing or otherwise, they operate as black boxes. So neither you nor I are privy to really the rules under which they operate or how they are trained. And frankly, there are no laws governing them in terms of ensuring that they are audited for bias and also that they would be fixed when bias is detected. So that's really the big problem. Here.
Okay, let's see if we've gotten the ghost out of our machine here and see if we can turn back to Drew Harwell in Washington. Drew, you're with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
hi.
Great. Thanks.
Sorry about that.
No, it's not your fault at all. We're going to blame the technology in this case. So you were telling us, you heard Professor Ajunwa there, we started exploring this issue of biases, and I'm going to come back to that, but there are sort of some other basic parts in terms of how these systems work and who's using them that I'd love to hear you on, because you did such in-depth reporting on this. So we were talking about how the system spits out a score about a person, and I presume that do the companies who are using the AI interviewer, they get to pick the questions and do they get to pick the parameters by which that score is created?
Yeah, they get to set effectively a pool of questions that they can then toss at the interviewer. And, they try and sort of play around with the parameters of the sort of behaviors they want to explore with the candidate. And so but they don't really get to assess, or analyze exactly what the algorithm is looking for, right? They don't get to say we want all just smiley people or people who use, big fancy words. And so they also don't get to really assess, how the score comes back to them. They don't really get to see, what is the algorithm really triggering on? What is it assessing as, a positive thing? And so that's kind of one thing that the researchers find so disconcerting. What exactly does a model employee look like or sound like? What are the words that a perfect, candidate would use? All of these are sort of, big question marks in this big black box algorithm. And, and yet still the companies are trusting the algorithm's judgment.
And does the algorithm ask any follow-up questions, or is it just that same set of questions for every interviewee?
No, it's just that rote set of prompts, and you get maybe five questions. And some companies allow the candidates to also sort of get a mulligan and kind of redo their answer. But this is from talking to people who have gone through the system, they find it just as unnerving as a typical human interviewer, and actually a little bit more unnerving because you're not getting that sort of human feedback or that human response. You can say a joke and the computer's not going to laugh, right? You're not really getting any of that feedback that you need to kind of self-assess and self-judge whether you're doing right or wrong.
Right. And so you spoke extensively with HireVue, right? One of the biggest companies doing this work right now. What is their pitch about why they see their system as superior to human interviewers?
Well, they feel like they can build a bias-free, objective arbiter for these kinds of questions, that it's not going to be, it's not going to just look for mini-me's, right? It's not just going to look for candidates who look like the human interviewer. It's going to be able to take out all of these sort of subjective measurements that that plague human recruiting and just boil it down to the numbers, just make it effectively an exercise in number crunching. And, from their point, when we talk to them about these ideas that the researchers have brought up about bias and worries about that, they say, in every interview, there's going to be these biases, right? In every interview, 99% of the candidates are going to be disregarded in favor of that 1% that's chosen. And so they feel like, we may have little struggles, but we're still going to be better than the human. And these computers can always be more objective than a human can.
All right. And so who's using this?
I'm surprised. So I cover AI and I always get these pitches about these systems. I always feel like, okay, yeah, right, this is not going to be used. But this is actually a system that's fairly widespread. More than 100 companies around the world, including some big ones like Hilton, the hotel giant, and Unilever, which does, all these consumer goods that we use. And more than 1 million people have already been analyzed. So more than 1 million people in the last couple of years, including a lot of college students, have gone through the system and been sort of judged by this computer.
So this is something that a lot of people are likely to face in their job hunt prospect and their job searches. Well, Drew Harwell, a technology reporter for The Washington Post, it was Drew's story headlined "A Face Scanning Algorithm Increasingly Decides Whether You Deserve a Job" that inspired this conversation. We've got a link to Drew's story at onpointradio.org. Drew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Professor Ojun will stand by here for just a second. We are talking about an AI interviewer and how that might be the object, not the person, but the computer sitting across from you on the table when you're looking for your next job. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the rise of the AI interviewer and how more and more major corporations are using artificial intelligence systems to interview you when you apply for a job. And we want to know what you think about that. If you've been through an AI interview or if your company uses it, does it work? Does it remove human biases that are rife in job interviews? Or does it introduce a whole new set of biases that then, because of technology, can be scaled up pretty profoundly? And let's listen to a little bit from HireVue. They are one of the bigger companies providing this technology. Here's a clip from their tutorial for potential interviewees.
Once you're in the interview, don't worry about focusing on the camera. If you want, you can hide your video while you answer the questions. Your HireVue interview might include a series of games. If so, you'll see a game summary screen. These games help the employer see how you think. I recommend giving the instructions a look so you can go into each game prepared and ready.
Sounds pretty innocuous, but a Wall Street Journal reporter, Jason Bellini, participated in a mock AI job interview with HireVue and then spoke to the company's chief psychologist, Nathan Mondragon, about his performance.
Here I am. Yeah. I just did the interview for a job as a customer support representative. How'd I do?
The first thing is we look at the AI score that's attached to it, and you can see that up here. you scored at a 37%.
That's pretty good, right?
No, that's out of 100, right? So you're kind of in the bottom third, if you will, in that job, so you'd be a low match, essentially.
So you think if an employer were to see that number, would I be written off most likely? Would it be filtered out of the process completely?
No, absolutely not, actually. What we would recommend is that the candidates could be rank ordered by that, but they still go and look at the different videos.
So you're telling me that everybody who goes through this, they get seen by someone?
Can be. They want to watch all the videos.
But they might decide, hey, this guy Jason only has 37%, not even worth our time.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Jason Bellini speaking to the chief psychologist at HireVue. Well, I'm joined today by Ifeoma Ajunwa. She's a professor at Cornell University's Industrial and Labor Relations School and a faculty member at Cornell Law School as well. And joining us now from Miami is Tomas Chamora Premuzic. He's chief talent scientist at Manpower Group and a professor of business psychology at University College London and at Columbia University as well. So Professor Chamora Premuzic, welcome to you.
Hi.
So what's your take on the rise of technology being used ever more ubiquitously, if I can say that? All of a sudden I thought, if I said that in a job interview with a computer, I'd probably have just tanked my chances. But what's your
That is a great comment to start, because actually we know that one of the new digital signals that best predicts future performance is the words that you choose to use in an interview, which can be recorded. And that's a wonderful example of how sometimes we don't have black box algorithms, but actually white box algorithms. The choices that people make of the words they use habitually, whether they're more positive, more negative, more complex, less complex, actually predict how they're seen by others, and they tell us something about their potential. But I mean, in general, I'm an enthusiast of new technologies, mostly because the bar is very low. It would not take a lot for technologies to outperform the average human interviewing. And, you know, to the title, a face scanning algorithm might decide whether you get a job or not. That has been happening for centuries because humans are face scanning algorithms. They just don't do it very well. And it's very, very hard, if not impossible, for humans to unlearn biases. So I think, look, these technologies are still in their infancy. It's almost comparable to dial-up stages of the internet. We haven't reached the Wi-Fi stage yet, but even dial-up introduced some progress vis-a-vis not having internet at all. And I think that's where we are. The good news is that we can use the same parameters, legal, ethical, and scientific parameters, to test whether something works or not, and we should be doing this.
So let's use my verbal word salad here a little more as an example. Because on the one hand, you might say, well, yeah, I mean, the job that I literally have right now is all about communication. So the AI would look at me being unable to complete a coherent sentence and say, this person is not right for the job at all. But could the AI, like a human might do, also read that moment and say, well, Meghna was thinking on her feet. She made a mistake. She acknowledged the mistake. She showed empathy for others who might be in that same situation. She accepted her flaws. She improved her performance in the moment and went on. A human might be able to see all that. Would an AI interviewer be able to see all that? Or would they just say, she said the word ubiquitously, she's out?
Well, so it's more of the latter, right? So, and first, we need to understand that AI should not be given the responsibility to make decisions on very small data points, right? It shouldn't be a one-off, you're out or you're in. It's a range of data points that are evaluated on an average 20-minute video interview or so. There are 80 million data points that can be scraped. And some of these are daunting and creepy because we don't know what they mean, but some of them do have meaning, and AI is just a prediction machine. It links signals to outcomes. If the outcomes are not biased and meaningful and we're using robust performance metrics, it can establish a connection that can then be interpreted. But humans provide the theory, right? So I'll give you two examples from another kind of new AI-based technology that can be used to match people to jobs, which is mining their social media footprint, what they say on Twitter, Facebook, WhatsApp, mm-hmm. etc. So on the one hand, you have things like somebody who joins and is part of a lot of pro-social altruistic groups on Facebook, you might conceive that they are a better fit for an NGO or pro-social jobs. And you don't need AI to tell you that, right? So the choices that we make of groups say something about our attitudes, values, and identities, and there is a match. That's still fakeable, but at volume and at scale, it probably doesn't. On the other hand, you have things like people liking curly fries. The group Curly Fries on Facebook has been found to be indicative of having a higher IQ, higher intelligence scores. And now, to this date, nobody has been able to come up with a theory that explains that.
I mean, and you might say, not causative, though. I mean, that's certainly just perhaps correct. A correlation, but not causative whatsoever.
Correct. But correlations have causes, and it's our task to try to find what they are. And AI algorithms are always going to be more ethical and meaningful if there is a theory to explain these relationships, right? So clearly, in the case of curly fries, it's not causal, because you can go and like them and your IQ doesn't go up, unfortunately.
Let it would be very good if it did. Let me turn back to Professor Ajunwo, who's been waiting very patiently here. Go ahead, Professor.
So, you know, first, I want to address this issue of correlation versus causation, because I think it is certainly a very big one. And I think it's actually a very nervous mistake, really, to think that correlation equates to causation. Literally, your first year of graduate school in any social science program, you're taught not to, you know, confound correlation with causation. So correlation is not causation, no matter how you want to slice and dice it. Just the fact that you liked curly fries does not mean, you know, that is what caused your IQ to rise. It can never mean that. But I also really want to address, I think, a really important issue here, which is, I think there is a false binary created between automated decision making and human decision making. So this question of are automated interviewing systems better than human interviewing systems? This is a red herring. It is very much an incorrect framing of the problem. Really, what we ought to be asking is, how do we govern automated hiring, automated interviewing, to make sure that we're still preserving the same sort of freedoms as we had when it was humans doing the hiring. So we have laws currently that govern how people can be interviewed, right? So, for example, they can't ask you if you're pregnant. They can't ask you your national origin or you know, take that into account in terms of hiring you.
Those don't automatically apply to AI interviewing systems?
Well, the question is that the AI systems can make those sorts of inferences. So they don't have to ask you, right? They can make those inferences. So, you know, Professor Shamara was talking about the fact that your social media information can be included as part of, like, automated hiring. And just think about all the inferences that can be made about you from your social media. We've had cases, right, of people being told they were pregnant even before they were knew they were pregnant, just because of, you know, their behavior on social media or even their purchasing behavior. And that's troubling, right? We need to think about what are the laws that should be in place now that we do have automated hiring to ensure that job applicants are being given a fair shake.
Mm. Professor Chamora Pramuzik, your response to that?
Well, on the first point, I never said that correlation meant causation. I hope that's clear. So we agree on that. And the second point, I also agree that it should be regulated and subjected to the same laws, not just laws, but actually ethical parameters that have governed the application of good science or science-based selection methods to staffing and recruitment for the past 7 decades or so, which doesn't mean that everybody did it. And so maybe the point where I disagree slightly is that let's not kid ourselves into thinking that these laws, for example, stopping people from asking whether somebody is pregnant or not, have actually created a status quo that is fair, predictive, and that actually works. You know, so I think there are somewhat double standards here. We talk a lot about whether AI is biased against humans, but I think humans are clearly biased against AI. When we are horrified or shocked by one algorithm that makes a wrong decision or has adverse impact because it has been trained with flawed human performance data that is based on biased perceptions. And in the meantime, we're okay with millions of human interviews being biased and prejudiced. It's like when a self-driving car crashes, we're shocked, but we're okay with 2 million people dying every year courtesy of human drivers.
This is such a fascinating topic. I want to dig into a lot of it, but both professors, if you can stand by for just a second, because I do want to make a tiny bit of space for our callers who've experienced this firsthand. So let me just quickly go to Adam, who's calling from Amarillo, Texas. Adam, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead, Adam.
Yes, I went through an interview with the company that I wound up becoming employed with, and I've been with for 5 years. It was an interesting experience. I didn't expect it, and I wouldn't say I prefer it. It was rather impersonal, and it felt kind of cloistered and inhuman.
Cloistered and inhuman. Well, Adam, thank you so much for that call. Professor Ajunwa, you wanted to respond to something that Tomas was saying.
Right. So I wanted to respond to this idea that, you know, automated interviewing is an improvement, right, on human interviewing, and therefore we shouldn't stop the path of progress. I believe that that's actually still yet to be proven, and I think we need to actually continue to study these systems first before we unleash them on the public. So, for example, we haven't unleashed self-driving cars on the public, right, because that would be unethical, because we realize we don't exactly know how they would perform in the wild. So we're still obligating them to undergo several testing before they can be unleashed in the public. So my question is, why are we just allowing automated interviewing to be used on millions of job candidates without really rigorous testing as to whether they actually work and, you know, the implications of their use?
Hmm. Let's go to another caller. Let's go to Ben, who's calling from New Orleans. Ben, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. My question goes towards content validity and psychological testing and subject matter experts in developing these batch systems. For example, in just application tracking systems applied to this new AI technology, where psychological testing is based on medical examinations and outside the domain of candidate selection process in the workplace.
Right. Ben, great question. Thank you for your call. And Professor Ajunwa, I'll let you take that.
So that's really a great question, Ben. And it really goes to the law, right? So when you talk about content validity, you're really asking, you know, the law requires that the questions asked as part of an interview should correlate to job performance. So you're really asking, are the questions being used, are they really probative of job performance or job fitness? And we don't know that because these systems are black boxes. And then the second question.
But if I may, we do know that there are certain sets of questions that are better than others. And so
right.
Why couldn't the AI use those systems? I mean, it would be up to the employer to choose the good sets of questions.
Right, right. But we also would need to actually test it, right? So has there been any kind of long-term testing to say we use these questions and they resulted in this yield of applicants? And then, you know, 5 years later, we now can confirm that, you know, the way they answered the question was probative and it did actually show job fitness. We don't have those kinds of tests, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have those kinds of studies. And then to the other question about the psychological questions really being a form of medical testing, that is a big problem, right? The Americans with Disabilities Act says you can't discriminate against people based on an illness, including mental illness. And so the question is, are the questions really trying to discover if somebody has a mental illness? And is that really being used to cull applicants? And if that's so, then that's actually against the law.
And again, to your point, we can't know because we don't know what the algorithm is actually looking for.
Exactly.
Professor Chamorro Premuzic, I'm sure you have a response to that. We've got about a minute that we have before the break, but go ahead.
Yeah, so I think it's not necessarily the case that you can't reverse engineer the algorithm or look inside that black box, because actually an algorithm is a formula. So much like you can program it to attend to certain signals, you can also program it to inattend to other signals. So with AI and machine learning algorithms, you can know what the formula was. With humans, on the other hand, that's not possible. I might get it right when I hire a certain person who then performs well. You still don't know why I got it right. Was it a matter of chemistry? Did I ask the right questions? Did I pay attention with my shrewd, intuitive clinical eye to what you were doing? Whereas with AI, you actually can understand what went right and what went wrong. And unlike humans, AI can unlearn things pretty easily.
Your point about unlearning is well taken, but you can only know what the AI has done and hasn't done if you're the employer, right? I mean, if you're the employee, you don't have access to those a million different tries in front of the AI interviewer to see what worked and what didn't.
So still happens today when you don't get a job and you ask, why didn't I get a job? And you get a letter saying, you know, it's not you,
you
it's
just
me,
weren't
you
the
don't
right
deserve
fit.
Us. It's the same thing, exactly.
All right. Good point. Well, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from someone who's actually helped develop or worked on one of these systems. We're talking about the AI interviewer. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about the growth in AI interviewers at major corporations across the United States. And we're getting a lot of comments coming in online about AI interviewing. For example, here's Brandon who says, a person who is great at tasks but doesn't conform to a programmer's vision of an ideal candidate could be overlooked. This is already a big issue in hiring. Whereas Shay says, for the vast majority of people, especially kids just out of high school, the responsibility for getting a career off to a good start is more than they are equipped to handle effectively. Shay says, though, that AI at this stage to improve initial outcomes would be an unequivocally good thing. Whereas Ice Heap, someone calling themselves Ice Heap, which I'm just going to presume all these comments are not from bots, okay? But Ice Heap says, it's laughable to think that there won't be guides for gaming these types of assessments before they even become prevalent. And guess what, Ice Heap? There already are. Let's turn now to Mary Chetty. She joins us from Alexandria, Virginia. She's a divisional director for the Society of Human Resource Managers, serves on the board as well. She's served more than 30 years as the top HR executive at many major companies, and as part of her work, she developed an AI interviewing system at one of those companies. Mary Chetty, welcome to you.
Hi, Meghna. Pleasure to be with you today.
It's great to have you, and thank you for your patience here. First of all, I just wonder, I mean, since you worked at so many major companies in America, do you see, regardless of the philosophical debates that we might have about this, is the spread of AI interviewing inevitable?
Absolutely. AI is absolutely the future of interviewing. We know for a fact that human interviewing has not been successful. It's not efficient. And as humans, we are biased, even though we don't like to think we are, and we're making hiring mistakes regularly, especially when hiring managers have not been appropriately trained or guided on how to interview. Typical interviewers make a decision within the first 7 seconds of meeting someone that they're going to hire them or they're not going to hire them. Then the rest of however long that interview is just a courtesy or a put-up and tolerate. With AI currently is not biased. AI allows us as human resource professionals to ascertain and assess a candidate based upon, one, do they have the required skills needed for the job? Are they a fit for the identified culture of the work unit? And then the AI, as we've already heard from several of the incredible professionals who are on with mm-hmm. us today, the various other pieces that AI looks at. AI looks at patterns of eye movement, body language. The FBI currently has identified certain patterns of eye movement as being deceitful or not honest. AI also follows some of that technology. And yes, the questions for the interview candidates are determined and developed by humans. But those questions should focus on the skill set.
On the skill, right. So structured questions about skill sets and behavior in the workplace actually do prove to be far more useful or relevant than kind of some of the random questions you might get in an interview. Totally agree with that. But Mary Chetty, if I may, since you brought up like the FBI uses eye movement as an indication of honesty here, I must ask, like, this is one of the fundamental questions about AI interviewing here, that it's the whole facial scanning part of it. Is that not freighted with problems, given that facial expression and means of expression and eye movement, mouth movement, hand movement, all of these things are so culturally weighted as well. And in fact, there's a whole body of science that says you cannot honestly assess a person's internal emotional state at all by anything their face or hands do. And yet the AI is doing that.
The AI is looking at it as one piece of the interview process, just as a human is making that same assessment when they're currently interviewing candidates face-to-face or a human video conference. It's currently happening, Meghna. And with AI, there's certain programming built into it that is consistent with deceitful actions, deceitful motions. I could talk ad nauseum, hours and hours,
right?
Because I've spent a lot of time working with AI, and it's fascinating. And as I said earlier, it really is our future.
Yeah. Well, I just want to play something briefly for you here.
Absolutely.
This is Lisa Feldman Barrett. She's a distinguished professor of psychology at Northeastern University. Her whole body of work is about the science of human emotions. And in January of 2018, she gave a TED Talk where she specifically addressed what she believes are the limitations of artificial intelligence in interpreting emotion.
Tech companies, which shall remain nameless, well, maybe not, you know, Google, Facebook, are spending millions of research dollars to build emotion detection systems. And they are fundamentally asking the wrong question because they're trying to detect emotions in the face and the body, but emotions aren't in your face and body. Physical movements have no intrinsic emotional meaning.
Mary Chetty, would you respond to that?
Interesting point. There are certain body movements that are in fact tied exactly to emotions, and I'm going to focus it on deceitful thoughts or mm-hmm. deceitful actions. There's a science that was created by Aristotle called face reading. And if you follow face reading, and if you've studied any of it, you'll know that face reading and how the lines are on the face, how some of the nonverbals are, it's a scientific fact proven that, for example, if you can see the whites of the eye under the pupil, that person is ready to commit an act of violence. And again, go to amazingfacereading.com, take a look at it, look at what Aristotle has said.
Mary, if I may, you're relying on science from the ancient Greeks here?
But it's continued to be proven, and it's still currently used by many law enforcement agencies throughout the world.
Okay, so hang on for a second, because Professor Arjunwa she wants to jump in here with a response, and let me go ahead and let her do that. Go ahead, Professor.
Yeah, so thank you very much. I want to say that there is one thing I agree with Mary on this, and that is the fact that automated hiring is the future, whether we like it or not. However, everything else I vociferously, to use a big word, disagree with. So first, you know, I think we want to avoid techno-fatalism here, where just because, you know, a certain technological advancement is inevitable in our eyes, that means we just completely acquiesce to it without actually asking questions, without actually being critical about how it works, without actually trying to establish rules as to how it will work for the better of society. So for one thing, the idea of face reading is so freighted, you know, your word, with racial bias, you know, going back to early 19th century racism, which was used to practice both colonialism and slavery. So the fact that we want to carry that into the future is so very misguided, so very dangerous. We really want to move away from that type of pseudoscience. There is no such thing as face reading, you know, that corresponds to either whether someone will commit violence or, you know, is intelligent, which is really what those science pseudoscientists were trying to claim. Mm-hmm. And we don't want this, you know, for our future. Rather, we want to focus on, if we are going to use automated hiring, how do we examine what it is doing? How do we audit it for bias? Because there will be bias, all right? The fact that it's automated doesn't mean that the bias is just automatically removed. It's still created by humans. So the bias will still be introduced both in the design and also in the interpretation, right? You know, just thinking that you can see the whites of someone's eyes and that means they're going to commit violence. This is not scientific. It is, frankly, a biased impression.
Well, you can't see me because I'm on the radio, but my eyes are pretty wide right now because of the how riveting this conversation is. But Tomas Chamorro Premuzic, you've been very patient here. I just want to give you a chance to respond to what you're hearing, and then I'll turn back to Mary Chetty.
Yeah, you know, so I guess I'm somewhere in the middle of the last two positions that we heard, right? So I don't agree with the fact that you cannot detect or identify feelings or emotional patterns through nonverbal expressions. I mean, that idea is new to me, and I didn't hear the TED Talk or see it, but clearly, and this is even the basis of Darwin's evolutionary explanation of emotions. Emotions developed as a communicational tool to express and communicate with others and facilitate and enable group behavior. So on the one hand, we are full of expressions, and there is things such as leakage, and there are patterns that we could identify as A means B, etc. On the other hand, this isn't linear and it's not rocket science. It's a matter of probability. So I don't think we can say for sure when a person does this, then it means that. By the way, we convey more emotions through our physical patterns of speech, for example, not the content of language, but our voice and how we speak, which has been tested and published in peer-reviewed scholarly academic journals. The area is called prosody. So analyzing the patterns of the voice or speech communication and linking them to personality or emotions than through visual cues, for example. But so, look, we need to fundamentally, I agree with the goal, which should be to improve things for employees and for employers in an ethical way and drive progress in society so that society is fairer. And I think much like with any novel tool or innovation, it can be applied in a proper way or it can be misapplied. And you can have better or worse goals in mind. I mean, the end goal depends on the user.
Yeah.
But where I think the last point I want to emphasize is that just because humans are developing these algorithms doesn't mean they're inherently biased, right? So we all use Waze.
How is that possible? I do fundamentally wonder how is that possible.
We use Waze or Google Maps, for example, and just because somebody who created that program prefers you to go this route, it doesn't mean that the algorithm is going to send you that route, for example, right? So
Waze has actually been found to be biased. And so has Google Maps. So, for example, it was found that some of the routing was actually routing people away from minority neighborhoods.
Correct,
so your example actually proves the point.
No, you are making the wrong interpretation here of what this, where is that bias? Is that bias from Waze or Google Maps? Or is that bias in society and Waze is a tool that exposes it?
That's exactly. Like when we, that's so, what, so my exactly. Point is the bias will be expressed through the tool. The tool itself might not be quote unquote biased, but because the tool is created by somebody who is biased,
it's not because it's created by someone who is biased. It's because we are asking the tool to predict human preferences. That's like when a chatbot is accused of being biased, sexist or racist, because it successfully predicts which candidates are going to be evaluated more favorably by humans. It's not the chatbot who is sexist or racist. Chatbots cannot be sexist or racist. They don't have a fragile self-esteem that they need to maintain or elevate by bringing other people down. You don't have neurotic chatbots like humans. So they are good at exposing biases that exist already in the workplace and society.
So I think we're saying the same thing.
We're saying the same thing,
but I'm saying this is like I want to lose weight, so I go on the scale and I don't like the weight that the scale gives me, so I smash the scale.
My concern is not so much with the existence of the technology because, yeah, right. I mean, like, it's an algorithm. It is not a living thing. But what I keep coming back to is whether in a positive or negative direction or anywhere in between, what technology does allow us to do is to scale things up very, very dramatically and at a speed with which the rest of society has difficulty catching up. So you're right. We have inherent biases in society. There is no doubt about that. But I have yet to hear anybody at this table or even of our callers say that any one of these companies actually have programmed their AI to operate in a way that doesn't just overcome biases, but perhaps seeks out employees that wouldn't be hired in other cases because of human biases. I don't hear anyone saying that the companies are doing a job to correct that. Mary Chetty, go ahead. Yeah.
I'd like to share a situation that we encountered. We used AI video interviewing, and we used AI to source and find candidates for positions to a very high level of success. In one of our AI video interviews, a candidate was having a very difficult time speaking, expressing some very atypical nonverbals and eye movements. And we had developed in the AI a flag that if this occurred, to immediately propose contact a human and have a human step in and finish the interview. That's exactly what happened. And a human resources professional stepped in, was connected to the candidate, and continued with the video interview. As it turns out, this particular candidate had a form of autism. Mm-hmm. And the AI picked up on something that they had not experienced. It was not a typical behavior. The human resource professional was able to speak with the candidate, assess that the candidate, in fact, had the necessary skills for the job, and the candidate was hired. And the candidate turned out to be just a stellar performer.
Yeah.
But here's an example of we took the time to program in that when something different or unusual happened, that AI would revert to a human.
Right.
So we found it to be very beneficial. But at the end of the day, when we're using any mechanism to interview and make hiring decisions, we must ensure that the candidates have the required skills to do the job.
That's right. It's not just the interview. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, Mary Chetty, you're going to have to forgive me for wrapping it up there, but we are out of time. And I think what I hear, one piece of commonality that I hear between all three guests, though, is that we really do, as a society, every time we need to just ask a lot of questions about these systems. That's one thing that I'm hearing in all of you. So Mary Chetty, Divisional Director of the Society of Human Resource Managers, also serves on its board. Thank you so very much. And Professor Tomas Chamorro Premuzik, a professor of business psychology at the University of College London, thank you. And Professor Ifeoma Ajumwa, professor at Cornell University's Industrial and Labor Relations School, thank you so much as well. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.